Now, as John Downing mentioned there, we are heading into a difficult winter, maybe an unprecedented winter, with some of the predictions that have been made, some of the contingency planning made by this government as well in terms of what could happen or how tough things could get. We're reading this morning that Ireland could become almost completely dependent on gas supplied via the UK within 4 years, with concerns over future capacity of key infrastructure to handle peak demand. Three quarters of gas used in Ireland at the moment comes via the UK. A June meeting of the Energy Security Emergency Group, which is the body steering the state response to the crisis, had heard that due to the limited and depleting gas source from the Corrib gas field by 2026 or 2027, Ireland may be almost 100% dependent on gas supply via interconnectors to the UK. So that's in a couple of years' time as to where we get our gas that will have to underpin or electricity generation. But over the last number of days, serious concerns have again been raised about our ability to generate enough electricity for this winter, and suggestions have been made that an EFET-like team should be developed to help steer Ireland through the upcoming energy crisis to ensure the country powers down at peak demand times and reduces the risks of blackouts. With me in the line to talk about this is the man who said that, Eddie O'Connor, chairman of Supernode, which is a global technology development company that designs and delivers superconducting connections to renewable generation and increases grid interconnections in that field. We also have Dr. Paul Dean, who's senior research fellow at the MARI and SFI Research Centre for Energy, Climate and the Marine at University College Cork. Good morning to both of you. And Eddie, thanks for joining us. If I can ask you first, this we're seeing every day reports coming out and predictions being made, but you believe that we need the sort of structure we had during the pandemic to try and help get through the winter. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a very short-term thing, Gerry, that we're facing. We had it last year, and we're probably going to have it this year. And what helped us during the pandemic was great communications. Almost every day, communicating with us what the state of the virus and the sicknesses from that were happening. We've got to do much the same thing now with our energy sector, particularly with electricity, which everybody uses, and the world is heading for an all-electric future as well. So we've got to tell people, by the way, tomorrow it's going to be cold, therefore, you know, we have to be very careful. Now, we don't solve the fundamental problem here.
Yes.
Because we've got ourselves into this situation because we're very poor here in Ireland in terms of oil and gas. We've had no real problems importing all that we needed from the North Sea, and I'm sure some of Russian gas finds its way here as well. But, you know, my point about all this is that we have to look to decarbonizing our sector, because we're still the biggest problem that the world is facing, Gerry, is this explosive release of CO2 into the atmosphere, which is forcing our climate to change. I mean, a couple of years ago, they figured that out of maybe a global GDP of 80 trillion or 90 trillion, 3 trillion was spent on the effects of global warming. So that's the real issue we have to deal with here. We have a short-term issue, which I think we can get over just about, but we will be able to get over it.
Okay, and Eddie, you're talking there, is it about the nuts and bolts of how things work? Are we going to be learning a lot more as a population about the hours of 5 to 7pm, about smart meters, about when you turn things on, when you turn things off, what we'll have to do if we have a particularly cold November or it's mild? The everyday communication you're talking about, this is what we want you to do next week, this is what you want you to do tomorrow, this is a heavy energy use, that's a light energy use, those sorts of nuts and bolts things to avoid amber alerts turning into blackouts.
Absolutely. I mean, I see that the ESB is now talking about turning on the smart meters that they actually have.
Yes.
If the population of the country knew what the price of electricity was going to be, for the next 2 or 3 hours, well, then people could adjust their demand. I mean, you can turn off a freezer. You can turn off a fridge. You can actually reduce the temperature of your house by 1 degree. And you can save a huge amount of energy by doing that if you have the information to hand as to how to do that. And, you know, to get us over this particular hump, there's a huge number of nuts and bolts things, as you call it, Jerry, which could be done in every household. And we have to be particularly mindful of the poor households, where energy poverty is a real issue for this country and a big political issue. And if I were sitting in that ministry, I would immediately put in place something that we had with NPHET, something like that, where we had instantaneous information coming out to the people to allow us to make relevant decisions to get over this crisis.
Dr. Paul Dean was on the line as well. Paul, do you agree, is this what's needed in the short term? There are longer term questions here about how in God's name did we get here? What are we going to do to get out of it? What sort of infrastructure do we need? How does all this play into our bid to decarbonise and move away from fossil fuels, which is where we need to go? But the first question of do we need to do this just to get over the current emergency? What's your view?
Good morning, Joy. You know, I think it's certainly of merit. You know, we're in probably the deepest energy crisis that we have seen since the late 70s, early 80s. And we're also one of the most reliant countries in Europe on fossil fuels. You know, we like to think of Ireland as being very clean and green, but we're not. We're reliant on fossil fuels for about 87% of all our energy. We're going to spend over 1 million euros in the next hour, Joy, just importing fossil fuel into Ireland alone. So we're in a very bad position. We're in a very vulnerable position. And I agree with Eddie there. I think what's needed at the moment is clear, concise communication. And I suppose when you reflect back on NPHET, that was one of their strengths, really, that, you know, you'd people like Professor Tony Hoolan, Professor Philip Nolan, who are really good, I suppose, at communicating the nuts and bolts, as you said. But I suppose on a wider issue, the benefit of a NPHET-type scenarios as well is that it depoliticizes some of the decisions that need to be made. There's difficult decisions, and many these decisions will be socially, maybe politically unpopular, that need to be made around, for example, the role of LNG, the role of data centres, the role of grid infrastructure, the planning process. And in many ways, by having a process that's outside the political spectrum that can look at the clear evidence and give good advice on that and the wider issues, that's often a very helpful thing, I think, from a public perspective. Now, I suppose, on the flip side of that, unfortunately as well, if things don't go right politically, you know, the NPHET type characters are often thrown under the bus. So it can work both ways. But I think there's certainly an awful lot of merit for us. And there's a huge appetite out there, I think, from householders to understand how they can actually reduce their energy use. That's not actually coming from the government at the moment. And that needs to be put in place.
Yeah. And from that, you're looking at a system where we have, at the moment this morning, you've got 4,860 megawatts of system demand. You have 342 coming from wind. And then that's where the gas comes in and where the other renewable, the fossil fuels come in to power it. We're asking the question as to how we change that. But is that, Paul, a longer term question? And this is where LNG comes into it. This is where the politics comes into it. This is where which direction we go from here to ensure, because it's going to take 2 to 3 years or 4 years if we have to build new power stations, or we have to improve the grid to ensure that we can get more from renewables constant, or build gas storage. All of those questions are a couple of years off in terms of answering.
Yeah, and this is the challenge, you know, that the problem isn't the future. The problem is very much the present. And, you know, in all credit to the Irish government, they have done a lot of the right things in terms of building out renewables. Now, we haven't done it fast enough. Most of our electricity at the moment is still generated from natural gas. But a fundamental element about renewables is that, you know, they significantly reduce the pollution of greenhouse gases. That's important. And they do that by reducing the use of fossil fuel power plant, but they don't replace the need for fossil fuel power plant. And again, on days like today, when it's not very windy, we do need to fall back onto those fossil fuel power plants that we have at the moment. And what we're using at the moment really is like stations up there in Tarbert. We're using stations up there in Moneypoint, which are unfortunately incredibly polluting from a greenhouse gas perspective.
And incredibly old, Paul. Incredibly old.
Old and unreliable. You know, in many ways, they're like old cars that might or might not start in the morning, and that kind of amplifies the situation. So it's the problem isn't with renewables, it's what you do when there isn't enough weather there to drive the renewables. We're relying on the older power system, which is, as you said, it's getting older, it's getting more unreliable. And we do need to bite the bullet and build cleaner natural gas infrastructure, power plants in Ireland, until we get to the renewable future that we want and that we need. Yeah. Now, our analysis here in UCC has shown that the best way to do that is by achieving the government's climate targets. Now, if we have a full and successful achievement of those targets, our natural gas use will decline in Ireland by about 40% over the next 10 years. But Jerry, it won't reduce to zero. We're still going to have to look at fossil fuels. And in many ways, it's trying to pick the best of of those options that allow us to meet our climate goals while ensuring the lights stay on.
Yeah, Eddie, in terms of that future, if I can ask you, given your expertise, the offshore area, like we're here in Kerry, we're having this debate at the moment, and it's a political debate at the top table about liquefied natural gas infrastructure. Many people saying, no, we don't go that direction because that only ties us in more to fossil fuels. At the same time, we're looking offshore to our west coast and wondering when and how beneficial offshore wind farms will be for us.
Offshore wind farms are the future, for, not just for Ireland, but Ireland has an incredible ability to supply. If we wanted to, there's 10 times the area of our land which is underwater in the North Atlantic. And we could supply the whole of Europe with this electricity for the future if we had that desire. But we won't be allowed to do that because every other country in Europe will want to be exploiting their offshore reserves. The wind is always blowing somewhere. And you mentioned a figure there of 342 megawatts coming from 4,000 megawatts installed for wind energy. That tells us what we need to know. The wind is always blowing somewhere. If we had a big enough grid, the super grid, linking Ireland with Germany and Central Europe and with France and with Italy, if you had a super grid there, then you would have almost firm power coming from wind, and you wouldn't have this absolute nonsense of trying to rely on an inherently unreliable source of electricity. But it's only unreliable when you look on it very locally, when you look on it in Ireland, when you look on it in England alone, when you look at it in Holland and Belgium. If you were to put a big grid between all those, well, then a storm, 200 storms arrive off Ireland every year. And for the duration of that storm, you would have a level power output if you had a strong enough grid. So that's what we are doing in Supernode. We're actually building the grid of the future. And it's one of the few times that Ireland has ever attempted to take an enormous step into the world of technology. And we're using superconductors, which are, you know, very low temperature devices to build this super grid. And once we do that, then we can rely 100% on renewable energy.
And how the question is, I suppose, how long you talk about from concept to design to funding to planning in particular, in terms of how we get through that system. We seem to be going very slowly in terms of our planning process for all these new technologies. Is that something that
needs to... Absolutely. Jerry, you put your finger on it. I built the Arklow Banks in 2004. And there's been nothing else built offshore ever since. We don't do the planning here at government level. You look at England. England's been, since 2004, England's been trying out and experimenting and building ports, the port of Blyth, the port of Aberdeen. These are all, you know, focused on the offshore sector. We haven't done any of that. And unless we start doing that and start planning now for 2030 onwards, we're going to lose out. Ireland has a chance here to, and by the way, for every megawatt you build offshore, you create 16 jobs.
Yeah.
For every megawatt you create, sorry, 16 person years. So that it's an enormous opportunity for this country and for Kerry, by the way. Very progressive country.
We've some of the biggest wind farm maintenance and wind farm development companies in the country in Kerry, providing a lot of employment. And we're looking at and saying, look, well, are we developing any of our ports or planning or looking at them to see if they can be involved in some level with the development of offshore? But not much has happened so far on that front.
Well, you're looking at one of the best situated ports in the history of the world in terms of offshore wind, and that's in Foynes. I know that might not, and the needed land to exploit this full offshore resource, the needed land will stretch into Kerry in a big way, because you're going to need huge lay down areas for these blades.
Yeah.
The blades on the modern offshore turbine are 130 metres long. I mean, they're gigantic affairs. And if you want to lay down, you know, a couple of hundred of them, you're going to need thousands of acres of land and all the employment that's going to come from that. So I think Kerry stands to gain enormously from this offshore venture.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, we're out of time. We'll leave it there. My thanks to both of you for giving us your perspectives on that and where we are and what we need to do in the immediate emergency term of this winter and the longer term direction we need to go in. That's Eddie O'Connor, chairman of Supernode, and Dr. Paul Dean from Ballymac, senior research fellow at the Mary Institute in University College Cork. If you have a view on what they've had to say and on what needs to happen now for this winter and the direction we need to go in from there to get us out of emergencies when winter rolls around, then I'd love to hear your position on it.